Chapter 15. Clear. I'll mortify thy flesh for thee. But let me clear up my points. Your worshipful henchard turned away. He asked me, and he questioned me, and then wouldn't hear my points. Said Abel, to the yard in general. Ow, I shall twitch like a moment and all night tonight for fear of him. The journey to be taken by the wagons next day was a long one into Blackmoor Vale, and at 4 o'clock lanterns were moving about the yard. But Abel was missing. Before either of the other men could run to Abel's and warn him, Henchard appeared in the garden doorway. Here's Abel Whittle. Not come after all I've said? Now I'll carry out my word. By my blessed fathers, nothing else will do him any good. I'm going up that way. Henchard went off. Entered Abel's house, a little cottage in Back Street, the door of which was never locked, because the inmates had nothing to lose. Reaching Whittle's bedside, the corn factor shouted a bass note so vigorously that Abel started up instantly, and beholding Henchard standing over him, was galvanized into spasmodic movements which had not much relation to getting on his clothes. Out of bed, sir, and off to the granary, or you leave my employ today. 'Tis to teach ye a lesson. March on. Never mind your breeches. The unhappy Whittle threw on his sleeve waistcoat, and managed to get into his boots at the bottom of the stairs, while Henchard thrust his hat over his head. Whittle then trotted on down Back Street, Henchard walking sternly behind. Just at this time Farfrey, who had been to Henchard's house to look for him, came out of the back gate, and saw something white fluttering in the morning gloom, which he soon perceived to be part of Abel's shirt, that showed below his waistcoat. For mercy's sake, what object's this? Said Farfrey, following Abel into the yard, Henchard being some way in the rear by this time. Ye see, Mr. Farfrey, gibbered Abel with a resigned smile of terror, he said he'd mortify my flesh, if so be I didn't get up sooner, and now he's a doing on't. Ye see, it can't be helped, Mr. Farfrey, things do happen queer sometimes. Yes, I'll go to Blackmoor Vale half naked as I be, since he do command, but I shall kill myself afterwards. I can't outlive the disgrace. For the women folk will be looking out of their winders at my mortification all the way along, and laughing me to scorn as a man without breeches. You know how I feel such things, Maester Farfrey, and how forlorn thoughts get hold upon me. Yes, I shall do myself harm, I feel it coming on. Get back home, and slip on your breeches, and come to work like a man. If ye go not, you'll have your death standing there. I'm afeard I mustn't. Mr. Henchard said, I don't care what Mr. Henchard said, nor anybody else. 'Tis simple foolishness to do this. Go and dress yourself instantly, Whittle. Hello, hello, said Henchard, coming up behind. Who's sending him back? All the men looked towards Farfrey. I am, said Donald. Say this joke has been carried far enough. And I say it hasn't. Get up in the wagon, Whittle. Not if I am manager, said Farfrey. He either goes home, or I march out of this yard for good. Henchard looked at him with a face stern and red. But he paused for a moment, and their eyes met. Donald went up to him, for he saw in Henchard's look that he began to regret this. Come, said Donald quietly, a man o' your position should ken better, sir. It is tyrannical, and no worthy of you. 'Tis not tyrannical, murmured Henchard, like a sullen boy. It is to make him remember. He presently added, in a tone of one bitterly hurt colon, why did you speak to me before them like that, Farfrey? You might have stopped till we were alone. Ah, I know why. I've told ye the secret o' my life, fool, that I was to dot, and you take advantage of me. I had forgot it, said Farfrey simply. Henchard looked on the ground, said nothing more, and turned away. During the day Farfrey learned from the men that Henchard had kept Abel's old mother in coals and snuff all the previous winter, which made him less antagonistic to the corn factor. But Henchard continued moody and silent, and when one of the men inquired of him if some oats should be hoisted to an upper floor or not, he said shortly, ask Mr. Farfrey. He's master here. Morally he was, there could be no doubt of it. Henchard, who had hitherto been the most admired man in his circle, was the most admired no longer. One day the daughters of a deceased farmer in Durnover wanted an opinion of the value of their haystack, and sent a messenger to ask Mr. Farfrey to oblige them with one. The messenger, who was a child, met in the yard not Farfrey, but Henchard. Very well, he said. I'll come. But please will Mr. Farfrey come? Said the child. I am going that way. Why Mr. Farfrey? Said Henchard, with a fixed look of thought. Why do people always want Mr. Farfrey? I suppose because they like him, so that's what they say. Oh, I see, that's what they say, eh? They like him, because he's cleverer than Mr. Henchard, and because he knows more, and, in short, Mr. Henchard can't hold a candle to him, eh? Yes, that's just it, sir, some of it. Oh, there's more? Of course there's more. What besides? Come, here's a sixpence for a fairing. And he's better tempered, and Henchard's a fool to him, apostrophe they say. And when some of the women were a-walking home they said, he's a diamond, he's a chap, oh wax, he's the best, he's the horse for my money, apostrophe says they. And they said, he's the most understanding man, oh them two by long chalks. I wish he was the master instead of Henchard, apostrophe they said. They'll talk any nonsense, Henchard replied with covered gloom. L, you can go now. And I am coming to value the hay, do you hear? Aye. The boy departed, and Henchard murmured, wish he were master here, do they? He went towards Durnover. On his way he overtook Farfrey. They walked on together, Henchard looking mostly on the ground. You're no yersel the day? Donald inquired. Yes, I am very well, said Henchard. But ye are a bit down, surely ye are down? Why, there's nothing to be angry about. 'Tis splendid stuff that we've got from Blackmoor Vale. By the by, the people in Durnover want their hay valued. Yes, I am going there. I'll go with ye. As Henchard did not reply, Donald practiced a piece of music sotto voce, till, getting near the bereaved people's door, he stopped himself with, ah, as their father is dead I won't go on with such as that. How could I forget? Do you care so very much about hurting folks' feelings? Observed Henchard with a half sneer. Who do, I know especially mine. I am sorry, if I have hurt yours, sir, replied Donald, standing still, with a second expression of the same sentiment in the regretfulness of his face. Why should you say it, think it? The cloud lifted from Henchard's brow, and as Donald finished the corn merchant turned to him, regarding his breast, rather than his face. I have been hearing things that vexed me, he said. 'Twas that made me short in my manner, made me overlook what you really are. Now, I don't want to go in here about this, hey Farfrey, you can do it better than one. They sent for E2. I have to attend a meeting of the town council at 11, and 'tis drawing on 4. They parted thus in renewed friendship, Donald forbearing to ask Henchard for meanings that were not very plain to him. On Henchard's part there was now again repose. And yet, whenever he thought of Farfrey, it was with a dim dread, and he often regretted that he had told the young man his whole heart, and confided to him the secrets of his life. 16. On this account Henchard's manner towards Farfrey insensibly became more reserved. He was courteous to courteous, and Farfrey was quite surprised at the good breeding which now for the first time showed itself among the qualities of a man he had hitherto thought undisciplined, if warm and sincere. The corn factor seldom or never again put his arm upon the young man's shoulder so as to nearly weigh him down with the pressure of mechanized friendship. He left off coming to Donald's lodgings and shouting into the passage. Hoy, Farfrey, boy, come and have some dinner with us. Don't sit here in solitary confinement. But in the daily routine of their business there was little change. Thus their lives rolled until a day of public rejoicing was suggested to the country at large in celebration of a national event that had recently taken place. for some time. Casterbridge, by nature slow, made no response. Then one day Donald Farfrae broached the subject to Henchard by asking if he would have any objection to lend some rich cloths to himself and a few others, who contemplated getting up an entertainment of some sort on the day named, and required a shelter for the same, to which they might charge admission at the rate of so much a head. Have as many cloths as you like, Henchard replied. When his manager had gone about the business, Henchard was fired with emulation. It certainly had been very remiss of him, as mayor, he thought, to call no meeting ere this, to discuss what should be done on this holiday. But Farfrae had been so cursed quick in his movements, as to give old-fashioned people in authority no chance of the initiative. However, it was not too late, and on second thoughts he determined to take upon his own shoulders the responsibility of organizing some amusements, if the other councilmen would leave the matter in his hands. To this they quite readily agreed, the majority being fine old crusted characters who had a decided taste for living without worry. So Henchard set about his preparations for a really brilliant thing such as should be worthy of the venerable town. As for Farfrae's little affair, Henchard nearly forgot it, except once now and then when, on it coming into his mind, he said to himself, charge admission at so much a head just like a Scotchman, who is going to pay anything ahead. The diversions which the mayor intended to provide were to be entirely free. He had grown so dependent upon Donald that he could scarcely resist calling him in to consult, but by sheer self-coercion he refrained. No, he thought, Farfrae would be suggesting such improvements in his damned luminous way that in spite of himself he, Henchard, would sink to the position of second fiddle and only scrape harmonies to his manager's talents. Everybody applauded the mayor's proposed entertainment, especially when it became known that he meant to pay for it all himself. Close to the town was an elevated green spot surrounded by an ancient square earthwork. Earthworks square and not square were as common as blackberries here, about a spot whereon the Casterbridge people usually held any kind of merry-making, meeting, or sheep fair that required more space than the streets would afford. On one side it sloped to the River Frome, and from any point a view was obtained of the country round for many miles. This pleasant upland was to be the scene of Henchard's exploit. He advertised about the town, in long posters of a pink color, that games of all sorts would take place here, and set to work a little battalion of men under his own eye. They erected greasy poles for climbing, with smoked hams and local cheeses at the top. They placed hurdles in rows for jumping over. Across the river they laid a slippery pole, with a live pig of the neighborhood tied at the other end, to become the property of the man who could walk over and get it. There were also provided wheelbarrows for racing, donkeys for the same, a stage for boxing, wrestling, and drawing blood generally, sacks for jumping in. Moreover, not forgetting his principles, Henchard provided a mammoth tea, of which everybody who lived in the borough was invited to partake without payment. The tables were laid parallel with the inner slope of the rampart, and awnings were stretched overhead. Passing to and fro, the mayor beheld the unattractive exterior of Farfrae's erection in the west walk, rich cloths of different sizes and colors being hung up to the arching trees without any regard to appearance. He was easy in his mind now, for his own preparations far transcended these. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.